According to a study published in the American Academy of Pediatrics, less work and more play helps a child to learn, develop socially, and promotes better health. Researchers also reported that curbing free time at school robs youngsters of needed exercise, leads to unruly classrooms, and ultimately the tragedy of listening to...
Other stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to LATalkRadio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
This station presents... Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Skin Tight Speedo Wearer.
Mr. Skin Tight Speedo Wearer.
Yes, we're sure that swimsuit style is all the rage on the beaches of Bulgaria. But here in North America, we prefer to keep our private parts private.
We can tell what your religion is.
Thank you, Mr. Skin Tight Speedo Wearer, for when you come out of the surf, you alert the rest of us beachgoers as to just how frigid the water is.
Your party is now an innie.
Why would you want to accentuate shrinkage?
Someone hand that man a towel, yeah.
Your tacky trunks go by many names. Banana hammock, grape smuggler, torpedo tube, and man sock. But they all equally display the inadequacies of Mr. Skin Tight Speedo Wearer, a real American hero.
Mr. Skin Tight Speedo Wearer.
Close your eyes, kids. Here he comes again.
Get ready for the best morning show on any kind of radio. Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio. Get ready for Sam and Kara in the morning. Give Sam and Kara a call at 323-203-0815. And now, here are your hosts, Sam and Kara.
Good morning. It's Tuesday, April 27th. Good morning to you, Kara.
Good morning to you, Sam. How are you doing?
With those gaudy...
you don't like them?
earrings that you've got.
You know,
I mean, they're unusual. They're kind of like,
they're like
interesting.
Plates. They're like plates.
Uh-huh.
Little saucers that cost $2.80 to keep breaking down. I keep paper clipping, stapling them back together.
I see.
Well, I'm going to get my $2.80 worth.
You like big earrings?
What do you think, Sam?
I think you do.
And I think, you know what, if you don't like this, then you're discriminating against
it's
tribes
not that
in
I'm
Africa.
Not, no, it's not that I don't like it. I just think it really stands out, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, everything about me kind of stands out. So
I suppose it does.
Let's just keep the theme going.
Okay.
Go let the beat rock. That's what I think, basically.
I see.
Just have fun with it.
Yeah, you do. So you brought us a guest into the studio today. So why don't you go ahead and introduce him to us.
You guys, from the lovely studio in Los Angeles, California, from the mean streets of Atlanta, dirty Atlanta, we have comedian Byron Bowers, hysterical.
Yeah, what's going on, everybody out there in Radio Land? Turn the lights down low, turn me up. I'm coming in like a rapper.
He's ready. Are you a morning person?
No, not really.
Not really.
What comedian is a morning person, right?
That's true, huh?
Yeah,
they live
true.
At night.
Other than myself.
Yeah. Whoopi Goldberg, maybe.
Yeah, that view. That view's making her wake up.
Yeah.
But I met him doing a show at the Improv, and he was so funny and just... And well, the cool thing about Byron is he is a talent, but he doesn't you don't have the attitude, which I like.
Oh, thank you.
No, he's all talent. He's funny and he's open. And sometimes you get in these competitive worlds and people get closed off and everybody's afraid of who's gonna take their gig or something like that. And he's just like, hey, what's up? I like your set. Boom. I was like, I like him then.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody that likes me means I like him.
Cool. So how long have you known each other now?
A good ripe, what, I don't know, 6 months?
Yeah, it could be 6 months.
I don't know, 6 months. You know, it's not
very
like,
long time for L.A. That's
long.
I suppose so, yeah.
Super long.
That's
no,
a marriage, actually.
Yeah.
That is an engagement. That's a wedding. And that is a...
That's a kid.
That's a kid. That's
kids
a
come out early in L.A.
Yeah, they do.
They don't
say
9 months. They 5 months and they out.
Yeah.
That's funny. I know. They're like...
Hello.
They can't wait to get famous, I guess. You know?
No, they're like, I can't handle this shit. This pregnancy stuff is getting to me. Come on. Just incubate them. Take them out. Incubate them. Get my tummy tuck and breast lift. Just do it. I'm not doing this whole 9 months BS. I got to go drink. But yeah, Byron's hysterical. I actually... when I was at the Los Angeles Comedy Shorts Festival, we were watching a short film, and at the very tail end of the short film, this character pops on, and it was Byron, and his like ears popping out of his little hat, and he's being all funny and stuff. I was like, "That's Byron! That's Byron! I know Byron!"
That's funny.
Yeah, I was sitting there, and I was like, "Byron's here."
Yeah.
And then the panel got up to discuss, and people from the cast came up, and he was there, and so Sarah and I, my roommate, mm-hmm. were like, "What's up? We didn't even know you were gonna be here. What the f?" So and I was like, "Yeah, come on the show."
Yeah, that's cool. So you're an actor too?
Apparently, yes. I just branched into acting.
Uh-huh.
Stand-up is my strong suit, but
right.
You got to be diverse in this business.
You do. So, where are you originally from, Atlanta?
Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh, wow. And when did you move out here?
2 years ago, in March.
I see. So were you doing comedy back there, too?
Yes.
I see.
3 years back home.
3 years, and you decided Atlanta's too small for you? You
yeah, Atlanta's too small. Yeah.
Well, what's the scene like out there doing comedy?
It's a pretty good scene. You have you got like 4 clubs. You got the Laughing Skull Lounge. You got Funny Farm. You got the Punchline. Then you got the Black Club, which is Uptown Comedy Club. And then you got the other little spots.
Okay.
But it's not like coffee shops or nothing. It's more like bars.
Yeah.
And then you go on the road and end up performing in trailers. From the Rednecks, it's great.
Oh, how is that like for you?
I'm sure they love you.
I guess because I got a white name.
Yeah.
When I show up at places.
So they don't know, huh?
Yeah, and I'm from the city, and I showed up. One gig I showed up to, it was like, yeah, it's the Intimidator Lounge. And I'm driving down, and I'm like, Intimidator? I'm like, it's only one thing I know that's Intimidator. That's the race car driver. And I get down, it's a trailer, and a curtain open and close, and it was crazy. It was dogs inside, kids.
Really?
Wow. And that's where you performed?
That's what I performed there. Yeah. Now, I'm from the city of Atlanta.
Right.
I got on a necklace. Uh-huh. I got an iPod, cell phone. It's like, I got all this stuff on. And I'm back in hometown. And the promoter like, yeah, black people usually don't come on this side of town after night. But I invited a couple.
Oh, wow. So how did the show go, though? Did they receive you well, or did you feel that there was...
I took every bit that I wrote and threw it out the window.
That's what you got to do. That's what you got to do sometimes. You're like, not the right audience.
Well, it wasn't the right audience. It was just as soon as I got on stage, they heckled me.
Really?
Ooh.
It's like, where Richard Pryor at?
Are you serious?
I'm like, he probably somewhere with Dale Earnhardt. So
that's funny.
Then we just got in this 30-minute conversation, and it went from getting heckled to being loved.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, by everybody. So they was like, hey, what a drink. And the guy's name was Bubba.
Oh, God, love a Bubba.
Yeah.
That's your Deep South now.
Yeah.
You're in the sticks.
Yeah, I'm in there. You ever met somebody named Bubba before?
No, never have.
They usually run stuff.
Yeah.
they the boss or whatever, you know, form they work on.
That's true. So was he digging you afterwards?
Yeah. He was cool. He tried to buy me drinks and everything.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
See, I love stories like that where, you know, like the opposites, the worlds kind of collide and, you know, you think it's going to go like crazy, but, you know, you find that commonality and people love to, I think people like to be drawn out of their differences to see, they're not always open and willing, but when they go there, it's like a new world they discover. So there's a sense of, I think they're excited, like, oh, wow, we didn't know we could like black people so much.
Yeah.
And then they're like, woo, black people are awesome. Well, only Byron Bowers is.
Yeah, only Byron Bowers. We would have more of you all on the side of town if we import y'all in.
Yeah.
That's how they do it.
But so it went from heckling and then they were just losing it.
Yeah, they love me. They love me. It was hard for the headliner.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Headliner, white or black?
White lady with a guitar.
Uh-oh, that's not good. With the guitar.
The white lady with a guitar.
That's too
Sounds like Kiara to me.
It is, but I rock that shit. So, no, he seen me do it. But, no, I'm telling you, like, if you go off of that kind of... Because it's not just the funny, it's a connection you make,
yeah,
right?
You make a connection.
Yeah.
Once you make a connection with anybody and not perform in front of different audiences... Hostels where people are from Europe, Australia. Once you connect, it's just a communication barrier. You can say whatever you want to.
Mm. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
I think that's I think the key with comedy is people think, well, you know, you look at people's sets and you watch them go up. You're like, oh, it wasn't that they weren't bad. They just didn't have that personal connection. So people don't feel invested. They don't. Yeah. You're forgettable to them because that human bond hasn't been made. And I think that's why people that are like, I'm working on my jokes. I'm working on writing. I'm just hammering this shit out. I'm just working so hard. It's sometimes the wrong approach. Sometimes for some people, they just need to learn how to be more human, I think, which is get rid of your fear and learn how to use the fear to kind of really, you know, kind of lock in with people as opposed to, because I've seen some funny people that just forgettable. It's not that they have bad material, but they're too nervous, they're too insecure, they're too maybe into their own hype, that they're not really, you know, breaking that fourth wall or whatever.
Yeah. You got to have a certain charisma as a performer anyway, you know, to sort of capture the people and stuff. Because, you know, there are just so many people, so many performers and stuff. You've got to stand out somehow, you know. Otherwise, you just sort of like lost in the crowd.
That's true.
And when I saw Byron perform, I've seen him a few times, what I thought about him was he gets on stage, he just seems so, he seems so laid back that he seems like, I'm comfortable with me, I'm not into me, like a real relaxed kind of, you can tell when somebody's in their, they've honed their craft. And I don't mean that you're like, the person's perfect. What I mean is, they know themselves.
Yeah.
You can see somebody on stage that they're comfortable with who they are, and they know themselves, and it makes the audience relax. Because I think as being also being, you know, watching a lot of comedy and being in the audience, I mean, you really want people to do well. I think audiences, they want, they're paying to laugh. So they want people to do well, but then, you know, you get people on stage that they're uncomfortable or they've got these weird quirks and they're not really knowing how to use them yet. I don't know, that tension and that friction. So when you see people like that are great performers that can really, they're already in themselves, you're just waiting for them to catch up. Yeah. I think that's great.
I think when someone's not funny, you feel cheated, you know, because you are going to a comedy club, you expect to laugh, and if they don't make you laugh, then you get pissed, you know? I mean, I know I do, although I don't go to many comedy clubs, but when I do, I expect to laugh, you know? But most of the people are just not funny, you know? And I don't know how they even get on the stage.
That's
a
high number. He said most.
Well,
yeah, I think most.
I can't disagree with him, though.
You know, like, for example, like if you have like eight comedians going up, maybe two or three will really stand out, you know? That's what I think. I mean, that's what I've seen.
It could be true because in L.A., it's so many comics, and they showcase, where in other states, only three comics going up.
Really?
They only letting three or four comics up.
Right.
And you have to really work years to get in those three spots.
Right.
So
yeah, that makes sense, yeah. You got to have experience. You got to be comfortable with the audience.
Yeah.
And I think it's also important where you test your material, you know? Because if you do it like in a big venue and stuff, I don't think that's a good idea, you know? You want to start it with smaller places. So if you bomb, nobody knows about it.
Yeah, that doesn't work for me. Because a while back when I first started doing comedy, I was like, I tried kind of some of that approach, like coffee shops and what have you. And it's just bullshit. They're not real audiences. Nobody in LA is really a real audience. But you need to have, I think, a real barometer for people that are wanting to engage. So I would go to these open mics and it would just pummel my confidence.
Yeah, that's true.
Whereas when I actually did a book show and I had a few friends that knew me, the energy, I guess everybody's different, but the energy of the people in the audience fueled my energy, which, you know, it's kind of like go big or go home anyway. So it's like, if I'm gonna fucking bomb, let's do it the right way. Let's do it where I'm humiliated and I cry off stage.
Why would you do that?
Because I feel alive, Sam. Makes me feel alive. No,
feel alive. I'm the opposite. Okay. My first time at a comedy club, I went on stage and I got booed by 300 drug dealers and strippers.
Are you serious?
And I never came back, you know, to the stage for like a year and a half.
No, I understand.
Yeah, it can hurt, huh?
Yeah, I didn't know the system, though. I didn't know, because, you know, I was funny off stage, but it's a different type.
But kudos to people that are like, I mean, people say, oh, you know, when they ask that if I do comedy, they ask me about the bombing thing. I'm like, well, who hasn't and who won't?
Yeah.
I mean, the whole idea is that you keep going upward and in forward in your craft and everything. But I don't know anybody that's even great that hasn't bombed. Because there's something about the tenacity and going after your dreams and your talent and also taking that risk, right?
Yeah, that's true.
We were talking about like the industry people, the people that book and the casting directors, the people that come out to see. It's just like with television, the suits, they call them. It's those people, you know, you need each other at times to work together to kind of get something done, but they're not the same kind of person. They're not, they haven't put everything on the line thinking something's funny, moved out somewhere, and then hopefully it comes out and lands, and then boom, it doesn't, and then they get back up.
Yeah.
They haven't been through that.
Nope.
You know, it's really, really, really interesting. Just different people, you know?
Right. So what was your childhood like in Atlanta?
Man, I was born in Athens, Georgia, mm-hmm. which is probably an hour outside Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
You know who else was born born there?
Who?
NeNe from the Real Housewives of Atlanta.
Yeah, yeah.
For those of you guys that love Real Housewives like I do.
It's where the University of Georgia is. Coming up, you know, we got our first gun when we was 10.
Really?
Are you serious?
And we shot small animals. We went fishing every weekend.
Really?
Yeah. It's a routine, you know.
It's a routine. They just start them young, huh?
Yeah. Quick. Because it was even though it was the city part of Athens, people had land. You know, they might have an acre, 2 acres.
Mm.
So you grew. Well, my grandfather, he grew his own vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
He hauled chickens. So we had chickens. We
Whoa.
Had chicks. He had hunting dogs. And so it was. He had wine. He made his own wine.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my foundation.
I see. So what were the guns for? Just to hunt or
they
to
was
learn
the hunt.
To protect yourself?
They was the hunt.
I see. Okay.
We shot squirrels and birds.
Really?
But did y'all eat
and
them?
Soda cans.
Okay, but you didn't eat any of that stuff.
The squirrels were eaten, but I never tried it.
Yeah,
the squirrels were eaten, but by the time I was 7, I moved to Atlanta, and they used guns. For pleasure.
Right.
not for protection, you know.
Yeah.
Or pleasure.
Not for hunting. If they hunt, it's just humans, right?
Yeah, or something, whatever. Yeah. Whatever they hunt. So
what age did you move to Atlanta?
Like 7.
7 with your family?
Yeah.
How big a family?
I wouldn't call it a family.
that's a little, yeah, I know what that's like.
It was me, my mother, and my sister.
I see, okay.
Yeah. So by the time I got there, well, I had to go back. We moved to Atlanta, then we moved back because child services got involved. You know, my mom was young and she had 2 kids. Blah, blah, blah.
Oh, I've been there. Yeah.
Yeah. So we moved back. I live with my grandmother and my sister lived with my auntie and her family. And then we moved back to Atlanta. So by the 7, that was a rough part time of life.
You
for
already
me.
Were like 40 years old in age.
Yeah.
You
I
already
was,
seen a lot.
I was depressed.
Smoking
I was
a
like,
pack
ah,
a day.
Ah, and then I got kicked out of my first school when I was 7.
Yeah.
Acting I lived in Decatur, Georgia.
Yeah.
I don't really call it acting out. I just had, I guess.
Oh, that's a parent issue. That's not a kid issue. When your kid at 7 years old gets kicked out of something, that's a parent issue.
I think it was thought in my mouth always got me in trouble.
Because
I got kicked out of another school when I came back to Atlanta.
I see.
That was like my last black school going to.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, man.
You get kicked out of black school?
Yeah.
What the
for some reason, I always got issues with my people.
Really?
Because I guess I'm different. I always think differently. So I got beat up when I first moved to Atlanta. I used to get beat up every day.
Really? Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? Because they could just tell you're special.
I don't know. Probably.
They just knew that someone's a little.
Well,
little
you
different.
Don't come across as the scary kind, you know. So maybe that's why, you know, you.
Maybe you just didn't look like you were strapped with a piece or something.
Well, going to that mold, you're supposed to, you know. No matter where you grow up, it's a certain mold you're supposed to be in. And when you're not in that mold, then
you're supposed to fall in line, right?
It just throws everything off. Because I've always been a smart kid.
Uh-huh.
And I really found out once I got kicked out of the second black school, and then I went to a mixed school.
Mm-hmm.
And then I tested out of my class.
Oh, wow.
So I went from a predominantly all black class to a class where it's only 5 black people.
Wow.
So it was the class was separated. It was the bad students.
Oh, really?
It was the regular students, and then it was that disadvanced.
Oh, wow.
Class.
Yeah.
So now I'm walking down the hall passing people getting punched in the face that I used to be in class.
Oh,
with.
Really? Wow. So you started getting your ass whooped at 7.
I probably happened way before then.
Oh, really? Just cause?
But it stopped. It probably stopped. I probably got teased and picked on until my 11th grade year.
Really? Looking back, I mean, because this is interesting to me, because I went through, I mean, obviously I've got weird written all over me. So, I mean, it's not cool in that age range when it's all about uniformity, conforming, and fitting in. You're all wanting to fit in. And see, the thing is I tried so hard to not be weird or different or funny. I tried to be the popular girl, which didn't work. I mean, it was the funniest damn thing because, I mean, it backfired on me all the time.
Really?
It just never worked out for me. And so, and it was just, I think it's, what's interesting is in your adulthood, looking back and going, oh, that's how understanding the system of it all and understanding how you're set apart. Because I believe God sets people apart, meaning we're not all supposed to be the same or the world would look the same. It's like people are world changers. People are meant to do different things. And you look back in your childhood and you see how you were different and like how I am now. Mm-hmm. I was like that growing up, but it wasn't, you know, I didn't know how to embrace that side of me.
Yeah.
So it was just weird. It was just weird. And, you know, like, you know, a click and a twick and a, yeah. So what, I mean, that's how I totally relate when you're, you know, but looking back for you, could you see what really set you apart? It sounds like, were you the funny guy or were you,
I think funny, I'm from a funny family, but it developed. By the time I got to my 11th grade year, I was like, you know, fuck fitting in. I'm just going to do me. And then that's when I made all my friends.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know, I just had a knack for, we used to do what we call joning. Uh-huh. Some people call it Dirty Dozens. And I used to just talk about everybody to where the point where I became the bully.
Oh,
so I went from being bullied to becoming the bully.
Ooh.
Really?
But people didn't want to walk by.
And that was dangerous, huh?
Yeah, it was dangerous. Because I used to get into fights in elementary school for saying stuff.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
But I never knew, you know, what it was until my 11th grade year.
Right. And so what do you mean, saying stuff to the teachers or to kids?
Teachers and kids.
Really?
Whoever. I got kicked out of class.
So you had a big mouth when you were a kid?
I wouldn't call it a big mouth. Mm-hmm. It's just deadly.
I see. Okay.
But you find out, like, especially, I had to find out in relationships again how deadly it is.
Because you can't.
Because you can say one sentence and just. Whoosh.
Yeah, you destroy everything.
Yeah, destroy everything.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So interesting. He's a married man.
Yeah? Right. Are you really?
Yes.
I got given up for Byron Bowers. He's a married man. He's faithful. And he's in the shithole of Hollywood living and making his way. And keeping faithful.
Mm-hmm.
We were just talking about that.
Yeah. It's tough.
Yeah, it is. It is. So, but you grew up without a father, right?
Yeah.
And that's probably difficult, although you may not realize it at the time, but it's sort of like something missing from your life.
It's major. And I want to say it's for no matter what your race is, it's major.
Mm-hmm.
But on a deeper level, as a black man,
mm-hmm.
When you're 18, and you step out into the world, you graduate from high school,
mm-hmm.
you have no direction.
Right.
I say it's like being if you walk in the middle of a football field, mm-hmm. in the middle of a game and never played before, and they give you a ball and be like, score.
Right.
That's the equivalent of growing up without a father.
That's true. Mm. That's
you don't know the rules. You don't know how to, you know, whatever.
I've heard that from a lot of men. I dated a guy who his dad stepped out on 8 kids.
Mm-hmm.
When they were all very young. And he said that, you know, he had brothers that helped him, but he said there's so many things that he didn't understand that he's like, nobody taught me, like even hygiene and weird things, like, and things about being a man that I think, just like women, I mean, we all need that kind of guidance and somebody to kind of affirm you in your masculinity or your femininity.
Yeah.
And I think it's very, very powerful. And I think it affects a lot of men's self-esteem too.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
And you weren't able to find like a father figure or something, an uncle
I had a couple guys. I had like basketball coaches and stuff, but it was nothing there. A couple of my friends, they had their fathers.
Mm.
And it's different to see once you graduate, to see people, the difference, because people with fathers, they go forth.
Man,
fast.
I'm trying to tell you.
Yeah. They go forth fast.
Right.
And if you, it's like, you just pick it. You can't seem to, you're scrambling.
It's so interesting. Right. That's so true. And I really do believe that that's why it's so powerful. Like I feel like God is just really, the family unit's really important. And I feel like there's a certain authority that God's given men. And I think that they don't, just like all of us, there's a lot of things about ourselves we don't understand.
Yeah.
Like we've been given talents and tools. And I think with being a man and the family, there is a certain authority God's given them, you know, to really shape and mold. And I actually was grateful. I had my dad in my life. We weren't close, though. It was very emotionally distant, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of almost similar, but not quite. So I kind of, in a, as a woman, I've experienced some interesting kind of things when I started to grow up and realize I have some broken concepts of men and things because I didn't have that daughter-dad relationship.
Yeah. Right.
You know? Uh-huh. That you don't really realize. I mean, my dad's a good guy. He's not a bad guy at all. We just weren't. There just wasn't that emotional intimacy. Mm-hmm. So as a girl, when you grow up, there's kind of this really weird distance between you and men, and you don't know, are you valuable as a woman? Are you beautiful? Are you, like, you don't really know that, like, there's just so much you don't know.
Yeah,
you just don't know.
Yeah.
And so I think what happens for people is they start looking for those things in relationships, maybe sometimes prematurely, you know?
Yeah. No, I think that relationship shapes your relationship with your parents, you know, and the way you're going to become.
Yeah.
And so, because this is sort of like your first relationship is with your father,
true.
You know?
Yeah.
And if that's like dysfunctional, then you're probably going to have problems with guys in the future when you grow up, you know?
And so, that's true with me. Yeah. I have a problem with guys.
Really?
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
you grew up like in a home with women, right? With females.
And I have
so
a problem with women too.
I hear you.
The thing is, like she said, I've grown to be appreciative of my father. I still hold him in high regards for some reason.
Right.
I used to fight.
Do you know him?
Yeah, I know him. Like, I used to fight. Like, when people talk about my mother, it never bothered me. But when they talked about my father, I would get mad.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's still a connection there. And I knew him. I spent, like, my first 5 years with him.
Mm.
And we just... The relationship, they wasn't married, so the relationship didn't work.
Right.
And off and on, I would see him, and I observed him.
Right.
And my mom. So, but he's paranoid schizophrenic.
Mm. Mm.
So he went through that when I was a teenager.
Okay. Really?
And then he went through, like, I guess, like 10 years of drug abuse.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah. So, in a way...
That's a bad combo right there, too, huh?
Yeah. But I'm glad I was removed from that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like I was saved from that.
Mm, I hear you, man.
You know, so that part was a blessing. And it gave me the freedom to create my own whatever.
Yeah.
So it's good and bad, but it definitely affects relationships.
Yeah, it really does.
Because
and your views on the world as well, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I tend to notice that a lot of my views were shaped by my dad, you know, and I think only later in life you start questioning, well, why am I thinking this way? It's just because my dad was thinking this way, and then you start, questioning this and stuff. But for the most part, they do help you shape your thinking.
Yeah, that's true.
And so it must be pretty difficult. You know, growing up without a father and stuff.
And imagine if your dad was paranoid schizophrenic.
Yeah,
your too. Views that you would have.
Yeah, and self-medicating with drugs.
And it's the 70s, uh-huh. I mean the 80s,
uh-huh.
when, like, we all know black man got it rough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah.
We got, you know, we got it rough because of everything that goes on, not just from society standpoint, but even in a household.
Mm.
Even in a household, mm-hmm. you know, with support, I see how hard it is.
Yeah.
And what do you mean on that? On that?
Like a black man could go out in the world and get beat down.
Mm.
He can go to work and have to not be himself.
Mm.
Be somebody else for 8 hours a day.
I got it.
And he could go on the way home. He can get harassed by the cops, and then he can go home and hear, you know, da 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 da.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you ain't a man, da da da.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot. It's a lot for people to go through, especially a man, because he's ego.
Right.
Yeah.
So he spent like a whole day of hiding himself within.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, do you think white guys go through that too, or just a different degree?
I think it's a different degree, because.
Mm-hmm. Because just a societal.
I think it's a different experience, you know.
Yeah.
I really do.
It's brought
you're
up.
At a disadvantage, I think.
When
you're black and you're male and you try to fit in with society. But it's not that it can't happen, you know?
Yeah,
And that's the thing is, I think if you show the readiness rather than hide behind your race, sort of like embrace it and embrace other people, then you fit in, you know? And especially today, Because I see like a lot of mixed groups, mixed couples, and so forth, and nobody really thinks it's unusual, you know?
Mm-mm.
So that's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, we're not there yet, but we've made a lot of progress. But I can totally relate to what you're saying,
yeah.
You know? Because it does happen. I mean, it does happen. You do get arrested for driving while black and things like that, you know? And that's pretty...
I haven't experienced that yet.
No, huh?
Knock on wood.
Yeah. Good for you. But I mean, you did bring it up, though.
Yeah, I got profiled. I don't had to sit in the back of cop cars while they searched through everything.
Are you serious? In Atlanta?
No, here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What? How did that happen? What happened? Were you driving or...
Yeah, I was driving. I was in Hollywood.
And then what
happened? My car got Georgia plates on it.
Yeah.
That's suspect anyway. That's a stolen car.
Are you serious?
Or drug trafficking.
Really?
Yeah.
No. Because of Georgia, or are you just playing?
That's what the cop told me. Like,
yeah, he's saying that's what the cops think.
Yeah.
Oh.
I got personalized tags. So if they put in a zero, or they put in the letter O instead of a zero,
uh-huh.
The tag will come up. It won't come up at all.
Right.
Oh.
So that's a red flag. So once I understood that, it wasn't, oh, they pulling me over to mess with me. Now it's like, is this protocol?
Oh, I got it.
Yeah, so you just have your stuff ready and be like, hey, yeah, so make sure you put a zero instead of an O. Oh, yeah.
If you don't want to get pulled over. So how did they treat you when they pulled you over?
Like a criminal.
Okay.
But this is how I look at it. If I was a cop, I'd probably, you know, be worse than they would. Because it's dangerous walking up to a car.
In Hollywood.
Anywhere.
Yeah.
You just pulled a car over. Police, that gang already have a bad reputation.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, they're going to come with their hands on their pistol ready for anything.
Wow. Oh, shit. Really?
Yeah. They job. It's, you got to imagine everything they go through.
You know you could do a ride-around with them.
Yeah, I heard.
I was offered by a couple cops. Because I ask a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I just think, like, the whole uniform thing and, like, you know, like, man with peck and heat's kind of hot a bit.
Uh-huh. I'm sure.
It's just there's something about that, but I'm not really, really interested in a ride around, but they were like...
I feel the same way about women who wear, like, 6-inch high heels and uh-huh. little shorts and walk around on the streets.
What do you think about them?
That looks good.
Yeah?
They just charge a lot. No, I'm just saying.
You like it when they rocking those high heels with goldfish and the clear high heels?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hot. They do charge a lot, man.
Do they still have, like, hookers walking the streets in Hollywood?
It's mainly Santa Monica Boulevard, I think.
Nah, the ones I see on Santa Monica, they got testicles.
Yeah, that's transvestite.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. And I still, it's weird. As a man, I still look like I curse one of them out and stared at his titties the whole time. Like, man, if you want a woman, I'll beat your ass.
So funny. Yeah, I've actually seen, I mean, they've really kind of come a long way where they've been able to just...
Almost look like a woman.
I mean, maybe not the best good-looking woman, but,
right.
You know, I saw one guy, he had on, like, a certain kind of low-cut jeans and everything that made him look like he had hips.
Mm-hmm.
You know, women are built, like, you know, wide
right.
hips and stuff.
Yeah,
hourglass.
Yeah, he made some heads turn. He made my head turn.
I went to Brazil. Recently, and
oh yeah,
it's a different ball game.
Really, they
when
have
you go
a lot of those there.
Yeah,
really.
When you go to foreign countries, you can't tell what's what.
Yeah.
Really, what was it like there? What did you experience?
I went to Carnival, so it was decent.
Well, decent. Carnival is like the biggest Mardi Gras in the world, right?
Right.
Yeah, but I guess you got to be like a drinker and into
oh, you're
that
not,
type of
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, you don't drink.
A yeah, it was my wife's birthday, so. She wanted to go down.
Uh huh.
And I like to swim.
Uh huh.
I'm one of those black guys. You know, I like to go somewhere swim.
Yeah. Lay out, get a tan.
Nah. I actually sunburn.
That was a
yeah,
joke.
Black people
I know.
Can sunburn.
I didn't know that. I'm talking to the doctor. He was like, "Yeah, you sunburn easily."
Yeah.
I'm like, "Come on, doc. You just want this copay.
You want this copay."
He gave me creams and stuff. Felt like I had an STD on my arm.
That's funny, man. So, man, Brazil, how long were you guys there?
A week. It wasn't the best trip.
Why?
One, we don't speak the language. And two, it was President's Day, Valentine's Day, and a national holiday in Brazil. And if your banks don't do business with Brazil, you're fucked.
Oh, really? No.
No money.
No money.
Really?
So what did you guys do?
Well, I had $40. Apparently, I didn't pay for the trip, but I had $40.
Uh-huh.
You know, and which translates to like $100. So I had enough money to get us there and buy meals.
Are you serious? So $40 cash paid for the...
Well, my bank, I was able to... I read a little Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to figure out how to make my card work. But my wife, they don't do bank. Her bank doesn't do banking in Brazil because the fraud.
Oh, okay.
And so, we both bank out of local banks in Atlanta.
Oh, yeah. Damn.
And you didn't know that, obviously, before you left.
Well, me, I'm not a planner.
Yeah I'm not.
So she usually.
But you gotta know where you're gonna get the money when you're on the trip, you know.
But I got survival skills.
Yeah.
It's
true.
So she was nervous. She was a nervous wreck the whole trip, and I'm like, cool, $40. This is a good week.
Yeah.
I'm trying to tell you.
I'm a comedian, so that's a good week for me.
Yeah.
I'm like, we got plenty. We can eat here. We can eat there.
Yeah.
So.
That's a good combo, though. I like people like that are like, you need the yin and yang, the one that's like, woohoo, sky's falling, just enjoy the view. And other people are like, I don't understand how this is going to work, you know, and you just kind of, that combo, you both need each other.
It causes problems at times, it's friction.
Okay.
And this is a thing, speaking of, you know, go back to the whole father and the parents, my wife household is real, she's from the strict two-parent household, the mother didn't work.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
She's used to certain things, and I'm not that guy.
Okay.
Example, her father's a military guy.
Got it.
He made all the decisions in the house. My mother made all the decisions in my house.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So when we together, and she's like, where you want to eat tonight? I'm like, you pick a place. And she's like, you pick a place. Because we're used to the, I'm used to
someone
the woman.
Someone else making the decisions.
Yeah, I'm used to a woman having a final say-so.
Right, right.
And she's used to man, so... We just sitting there looking at each other sometimes.
Like, somebody please make a decision.
What's her personality like?
She's an Aquarius, so she's real. You know, she's laid back. She's a real planner.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
How did y'all meet? Did she see you do his comedy? Or was like, I love him.
Nah, we met in college. She sat in front of me in math class.
Uh-huh.
Well, so you met back in Atlanta then?
Yeah, like 99 or 98.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
So you've known each other for that long, 11 years already. And when did you get married?
2 years ago.
2 years ago. Wow. So you've been together for a while. I mean, you...
Well, off and on. Off and on.
I see.
Probably my issues because you know, relationships don't last.
Right.
That was my thing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So when we get to a certain point, it's just like, okay, time for me to leave.
See you later.
So now the only part when you do women like that
and you
back with them, like if she had her heart broken and you was the person that broke her heart, you got to pay for that.
Yeah. Yeah, somebody has to, right?
Yeah, you're the one that's paying for that later on.
Especially if she's on the rebound, you know?
So you guys met in math class, and then, like, you started dating immediately, or how did it go?
No, she was dating somebody else I knew, and she was my math tutor.
I like it already.
Yeah, and I ain't a fell in the math class, but...
Did you really?
Yeah. And I used to go, but I couldn't concentrate, man. She... Normally, you know, when, you know, she used to wear these little shorts.
Uh-huh.
And her room used to be like 1,000 degrees.
Uh-huh.
And it was just hot, and I had this boner.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I couldn't concentrate.
He's a man, you know? I mean, well, what are you going to do, you know? You
it smelled there, good.
The hot chick.
Yeah, I'm in the scents and stuff, and her legs were just pretty. And I couldn't, like, concentrate on anything else.
Yeah. That's so cute.
So much for the math, man.
Yeah, so much
did
for
you,
the math.
Yeah, did you play it off like you were asking questions or were you just making jokes or
well,
what?
I didn't really want to get with it at the time. I needed help. So something happened. One, it was like a Grease moment from Grease 2.
Yeah.
But school was about to let out and really it's the opposite. And I was like, man, I'm going to miss you this summer. I don't know where that came from. And that changed. Stuff changed there.
Oh, you said that and it just changed everything?
Yeah, everything just changed from that moment.
Really? What did she say? Or was she like just shocked or what?
Yeah, she was shocked. And I ended up going over her house and we played cards and I lost a bet. And that's how we ended up on our first date.
Oh, yeah?
And I won. So we went to the movies, but I made her wear a dress because she don't wear dresses.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah?
And it was crazy.
Yeah,
that's so cute. I love that.
Because my dating experience wasn't... Mm-hmm. Shit.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't go on a lot of dates in high school. And
yeah.
And first college I went to, I had random flings and cars and, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that was my dating experience.
Yeah.
Behind a tool shed.
Behind a tool shed.
Stuff like that. So.
So first date, you guys went to a movie and you made her wear a dress.
Yeah.
And how'd she look?
She looked good, man. She got this walk.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
She got a strut?
She got a little strut on her, and she got, like, I like bottom-heavy women.
Yeah.
So she had a little, she had an ass on her. Yeah. Even though I wasn't doing this at the time, I was like, man, I want to put my face in between her.
Yeah. There you go. That's the way to
do it. But a lot of my sexual experiences was with her, so she experienced the golden years.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, my 21 and all that. She had all that stuff.
Oh, she got all that from you.
8 years later, she's like, "Where that guy at?"
Yeah.
I'm like, man, sex ain't even my main thing.
Oh, so how has sex changed for you being married?
Man, now.
Well, she's in Atlanta still.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's
so
moving
you have
here.
A long distance.
Yeah, she's moving here this week.
Wow.
Sex is a problem for her.
Because she wants it, you know? What?
Yeah, it's a difference now. It flipped. Everything flipped.
Yeah, that usually does happen in long-term relationships.
It's not my main thing anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
But what are you? You're in your 20s, right? Are you 30? What?
Yeah, I'm 30 now.
Yeah, but it's not old.
It's not old. But my drives, you know, she had the 21, the 18, 19, 21.
She had the crazy hormonal years.
She had it when you could do it, like, for, like, all night, 8 hours. And now my interest is not there. My mind has shifted.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, that's a good joke.
That's a good joke.
That's what I'm
thinking
about.
That's when you get a big smack and go, you need to reshift that mind.
Yeah, that's a process honestly, that we're going to go through. Because after a while, you have to make it work.
Yeah.
You got to make sure you all turn each other on.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just certain things that we have to do. Or, man, I know that I'm visual now.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was younger, she could just come with the scarf and the jogging pants. And I'm like, cool. But now it's like, okay, you got to put on these wings.
Wait a minute. So men are visual. We know that, right?
Yeah.
But you're saying that... It's like the stimulus isn't the same. You need more.
Yeah, I need more now.
Well, and what do you mean?
I don't know. I need... It's outside of the bedroom. Just like it's outside of the bedroom for women.
Uh-huh.
Now it's whatever happens outside of the bedroom.
That turns you on.
Yeah.
And give me an example.
Like now I need the conversation. I need all that.
Oh, yeah.
I need a nice...
You're becoming a woman. That's what it is.
No, yeah. It's a whole person.
That's what's happening, you know?
No, it's a whole person, though. That men are made that way, too.
They said, like, more... When men sex drive change, we get more emotional.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
So once our sex drive started to go down, we become more emotional.
Well, I feel like...
I need to hug, and I need to kiss.
You need affection.
Yeah, I need to make out now. When it's first, it's just, that's bang, get it over with. But now, I want all this. I want you to dress up, wear some leggings and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Does she like doing that stuff with you?
Nah, she's the opposite. She like to, like, hey, I'm here.
Yeah.
Let's lay
Take
down.
Me.
Yeah, let's lay down and open my legs, and then I'm going to sleep.
Really?
Well, that's marriage. I mean, most of them are like that, you know?
Really?
I mean, yeah.
This is real. This is real stuff. I don't know if you ever heard it, and I share it with you, but this is real. This is real stuff. And then you got to add to the fact that, one, I got a porn addiction.
Do you?
Yeah. So,
oh, she's not cool with that, is she?
No, she all right, because it keeps me
from messing
not
around.
Walking out.
Messing around, right.
Because I'm too tired. I don't have the energy.
But for a man that... okay, keep going. I'll ask in a second.
And, it adds to what turns you on. Now it's more required.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I don't believe in pornography. But let me ask you a question. With the pornography, and you're doing that as an outlet so that she's not there and you're trying to stay faithful, right? Is what you're saying?
No, now it's just...
It's a whole thing.
Yeah, now it's a thing. Like,
it's a thing.
I needed to go to sleep.
Oh, really? To get through your day, you got to go, okay, I hear you. So,
And I'm from an A-type family.
Mm-hmm.
My father's side of the family
is
drug addiction, cigarette, tobacco,
yeah.
So I don't think I did bad.
No, I'm not, dude, I'm not judging you. I'm a pig.
No, this is me. This is me doing myself. You know what I mean?
So. And you're not the only one. You know, I mean, many men, now that porn is so easily accessible, then, you know, I think that more people have this kind of issue, you know?
Very in your face. I think if I were a man and I was on the internet, I think it'd be hard to not be addicted to
porn.
It's
tough.
I think it'd be hard to not, because I mean, I know, like, if you go on anything, it's gotten better, I think, throughout the years, but where anything pops up and you're like,
I was driving down the street and had my laptop in my car and found a neighborhood that had Wi-Fi and did it in my car.
Oh my gosh, are you serious?
Man, it was the weirdest experience because it was late at night. And it was right before I was going into a club, so I'm like, I'm just going to knock one out right quick and get relaxed before I go in the club. Now, the crazy part is I'm doing it, and you know, you got to find the right clip and all this stuff before the battery goes out. And I start, and I thought somebody came into my car and shook it.
Really?
And I'm looking in my mirror. I close the laptop, of course, first. And then I'm looking in my mirror, and I don't see anybody. And I'm like, oh, man, it's God fucking with me, telling me to stop.
Yeah.
So I just stop. I just get out. I'm freaked out. I walk in the club, and they like, man, we just had an earthquake. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. That was the only earthquake I experienced.
You thought it was a shattering orgasm.
Oh, my God.
And that was the first earthquake that I was able to feel.
Uh-huh.
But I missed it, one. And two, I could have finished. And went in the club.
Well, at least you'll remember that earthquake, you know?
That's like really freaking funny, Byron. Oh, man.
All right. We're going to take a little break. We'll be back right after this.
Hello. George Takei here. You know, the only thing more gay than me and Rad are the confines the FCC plates on terrestrial radio. That's why I tune in to the internet and listen to LA Talk Radio. It's better than sucking cock. Oh my.
Thank you. open on Sam and Karen in the morning. Pick up your phone and jump in on the conversation. Dial 323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815 and get in on the fun. Now, let's get back to Sam and Karen in the morning on LA Talk Radio.
Okay, and we're back, and we have Byron in the studio.
Byron Bowers!
Yeah, seemed like you've fallen asleep there.
Oh, Byron? No, that's just his look.
I just look like this.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
No, you were slumped
sleepy
back.
Sleepy or high? That's...
Yeah, sleepy or high, you kind of got that look. You're neither, right?
No.
Mm-mm. Yeah, that's cool. So, you've lived with your wife separately for 2 years,
yeah.
right? Wow. Did
now
you get married here or back there?
Huh? Well, we got married in Atlanta, Georgia.
Right.
So,
and then you moved out here by yourself?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
How did that go, that whole transition of, like, I'm going to go be doing my comedy on a different level now, bye?
Oh, with her?
Yeah, or was she so supportive?
She's supportive because she know me before it was comedy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, when somebody see you, like, lose every job you have.
Yeah.
And they see She'll something that works for you, they're supportive.
Right. Yeah.
Now, it's times financially where, you know, that comes up for her because she's from a household where everything was taken care of
mm-hmm.
by man. But somehow she's become like an independent woman mm-hmm. and she makes those moves. It's strange.
Right.
It's strange how it works.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But how come she didn't move here with you?
Because of finance.
I see.
And planning.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm like, hey, I'm about to go to California in a year. She's like, hold on, I'm working. I got this, that. And I'm like, well, we could do it, you know, da-da-da-da. And
yeah.
that's how I move.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I say,
and you go back there? I mean, how often do you guys see
each
other?
Man, we used to see each other, like, it went from once every couple months to once every 4 months.
Mm.
And now she's coming out here. And the thing is, it gets bad distance from women-wise. Mm. Or it depends on the person.
Right.
Like, what do you mean gets bad?
It's like a love language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you ever heard of that story, like 5 love languages.
Yeah, that's a good one. You need to read that one, Sam. You'll like it.
And hers is spending quality time mm-hmm. with someone. That's how she receives love.
Right.
So you could tell her you love her all day, but if you don't spend time with her,
mm-hmm.
everything you say is a waste.
Right.
So that started to play into it.
Mm.
Just time started to wear on her.
Right.
Because I was her relief from
right.
work.
Mm-hmm.
So right. she worked hard.
Yeah, I don't see how you can get married if you're not together with each other. You know what I'm saying? I mean, or maybe even for a limited time, but... this has been like 2 years, right?
Wow. I don't have those rules, though.
Right.
I don't have those rules.
Mm-hmm.
So she's from that environment where they say, you're supposed to live together, da, da, da.
Right. But you don't have those rules.
I don't.
So, I mean, but so that must be like pretty difficult for you guys.
Yes, it's difficult. It's difficult. It gets difficult, but it's not bad. Because one thing I know or I asked
mm-hmm.
is that you're willing to grow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's certain qualities that you need in a person.
Right.
And to me, the most important thing is you're willing to grow.
Right.
And you're committed.
Mm.
Now, if you find somebody that's willing to grow and they're committed, that knocks everything else out the window.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Because there's you guys can deal with stuff as it comes and you guys can be flexible and work through
it. Yeah, no matter how hard it is, you learn, you know, whether you go to counseling or whatever, you're willing to learn and grow,
mm-hmm.
you know, and not give up.
Yeah, that's really big. What about the distance? So how often, who flies where? How often have y'all seen each other?
We do both. Whether I go home, like I was in Georgia
mm-hmm.
The whole month of December.
Okay.
And then she came out here in February.
Okay.
And now it's April.
Okay.
I'm about to say March. And she's moving out here now.
Oh, I see. Okay. So yeah. That'll make things easier. Yeah.
So that's really
good. You're
pretty
lucky that it lasted, you know?
Yeah, because it was on a point where it wasn't going... We was like, what are we going to do? This is the last shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
You know? It's like
we was tested.
Married.
I don't know what you believe in, but it's like we was getting put through the test, and we each had to grow
mm-hmm.
separately. Because when you're a couple, you still grow separately. That's how people grow apart.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is to make it where y'all still have that communication or that, mm-hmm. that connection between you all
mm-hmm.
to check in with one another and be like, hey, I don't eat shellfish no more.
Yeah.
Or something, whatever it is.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing. It's a fight. It's a fight to me because I haven't seen it. Like, my grandparents, they were together. Well, and my granddad did some crazy stuff, but they was together.
Mm-hmm.
My grandma stayed until he died. Yeah. And I don't mean to laugh, but I heard her story when he passed, and she was like, I made it. I did it.
Really?
Yeah, she was happy. She was relieved.
Made it to the finish line.
But he's done some crazy stuff to make her hate him.
Wow.
But she still stayed, and she cooked 3 meals a day, and da-da-da. And that's what's missing. And then me and my wife, we still got those old school values.
Yeah, wow.
To where divorce ain't really an option. Like Will Smith said, divorce is not an option. Because it's an option, then it's like a plan B.
Right.
How are you going to focus on plan B instead of
Yeah, you got to kind of decide before you get married, is this even something that I can fall back on or not, you know? I think that's really, really important. I think marriage, too, I mean, is such a... It's lost so much of its value in kind of the public eye because people don't take it serious. They don't really want to nurture it. They want the marriage to just serve them. And then when it stops serving them, they don't want to do it. They don't want to work and labor for it.
Yeah, it's tough.
You know?
Yeah.
It's tough. Like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, but I think for a good marriage, it shouldn't have to be hard work, you know?
But
it shouldn't have to need work all the time.
Well, I mean, I don't know about you, but I mean, even some of my best friendships, I mean, they're very gratifying. I get a lot out of them, but have we reached points in our friendship where they've done me dirty or I've done them wrong or just the lack of communication or something where there's a rift and we have to work through it? I mean, mm-hmm. I've been, my closest friendships, we've all gone through what they call the tunnel of chaos to get through the other side, and there's, you know, goodness on the other side. But if you always just talk about common interests and you never go deep with the person because you want to avoid conflict, then you're always going to have shallow friendships that are forgettable, and if they leave, nobody cares. But to have really deep, deep, deep friendships are people that know your crap, seen you at your worst, you guys have gotten on each other's nerves, and then you still love each other through it. And there's something so profound about that because there's a trust, there's a bond. You know that, like, a lot of my really good friendships, that's who I am. I go there with people. So a lot of my friends are like, I've never really had friendships where I've gotten in so many arguments before.
Yeah.
But it's more because we challenge each other on everything.
Right.
And everything's done with humor and love. So there's just a real depth in our friendship where she knows I'm always going to be there for her.
Yeah.
No, if I can be there, I'm going to be there, and vice versa. I mean, she's seen me at some really bad points in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's only known me a couple years. Year and a half.
Yeah.
I kind of agree with you when it comes, when I say hard work, to me, it's always the communication.
Mm-hmm.
First off, between man and woman.
Mm-hmm.
And, because it's new.
Right.
It's new to me.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is new, you know. And we're from two different backgrounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, man, you know, African Americans, it's a class system.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Especially one from a family, middle. Yeah, like a two-parent family
mm-hmm.
who's, they didn't have to move. They grew up in the same house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, da-da-da-da. And then my family is a little more... whatever, like, we don't hang out together and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's the blending of those two cultures within one culture.
Mm.
We're from two different sides of town.
Yeah.
How does her family view you?
I want to say, I think it's the normal. I ain't going to say the normal, but since her dad was military or whatever, and I'm the artist, you get that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's not going to protect you, or he don't look like a provider. Da da da.
Uh huh.
You get his fears.
Yeah.
Oh, don't.
You get his fears that's in her, that's instilled in her.
Oh, okay.
So she has the same. Mm-hmm. It's like you could hear him through her.
But when you're rocking it on Comedy Central and you get sold out shows and you're doing your new TV show comes out and you are rolling hardcore, you know what I'm saying?
Well, it's not, to me, it's not even about
the money.
No, it ain't about, I ain't gonna say it ain't about the money, but it's not about pleasing him.
It's not. There you go.
Because I can't. I can't do none of that stuff.
No, and you can't be concerned about your job as an artist is fueled from a different source, and it can't be to prove somebody wrong. However, you step back and you look at that, and you really believe in what you believe, and you believe in, you know, where you're going, and who knows what exactly what it's going to look like or the timing, but you know you're operating in your talents, right? You know you're using the tools and the resources of who you are.
Yep.
You know you're using those things.
Yeah.
And so there's only good that's going to come out of that. It may not be stardom, which I think it will be for you, but, you know, it may not look that way. But my point is when people are affected by that.
Yeah, that's true.
And so when he start, even if he comes to like a smaller show or whatever and sees you do your thing, he's got to be so proud.
Yeah.
Has he seen you?
No.
He's never been to a show?
Nope. But when he found out I was entertaining the troops, that was the first time she said he told somebody.
Really? That's good.
Yeah.
I like that. So what did you do that?
He didn't shoot nobody, but he went.
So wait a minute. So you went to, did you go to?
Bahrain? Yeah.
Is that in Iran?
Where is it? A small island outside of...
The Persian Gulf.
Persian Gulf.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What was it like?
The part I was in was beautiful. I had a suite.
Okay.
It was a Navy base.
Okay.
The guards were interesting. It was they had the curved swords, Persian swords.
Really?
And they was good with them. And I walked into a door and had a tank pointing a gun at me. That was the strangest thing ever.
Why was it? You just happened to walk in the line. It was just hanging out.
Yeah.
So what was it like as far as the troops? Were they just? I bet they're so grateful. That's what I've.
Yeah, the troops were grateful. I saw reverse racism, which was neat.
In what way?
I was about to say the blue-eyed devil.
Oh.
That's what they probably would call them over in the Persian Gulf.
Yeah.
But you know, it's rules. They give you rules when you go over there. Don't walk out by yourself. Mm-hmm. Don't take cameras. Da da da. And I did all that. And it was like the Caucasian people, the males, was nervous walking the streets. Just like a black man would be here, because they can get punched, beat up, or anything, especially during Ramadan or holidays.
Oh wow.
Yeah, spiritual holidays. They could just get snatched off the street and beat up and left.
Yeah, and it happens.
Yeah, it happens. But me, I'm walking around. When I see people, I'm like, hey, brother. They're like, hey, brother, what's going on?
Da, da, da. Oh, and they're just loving you.
Yeah.
They just loved you?
They loved me, and it was cool.
I love that.
All I got to do is, because, you know, I'm born. I'm from the South. I'm Christian. I can just switch that to Allah. Praise Allah. Praise Allah. And just keep going.
Oh, yeah?
I'm in the club. They playing rap music.
Really?
They had American cars over there. So, Iraq dude, they was driving by. They had music blasting. Mm-hmm. And they was like, what's up, nigga? And I heard it, and they asked it, and I'm like, okay.
You didn't care you were.
No, that was cool, because it was like...
They're saying it because it's the music.
The music, and it was in a box Chevy, which is like an 85 Chevy Caprice, which is stuff that we ride in the South.
Oh,
with rims on it. They had everything.
Are you serious?
Yeah, they had everything on it. So I'm like, this is nice.
Yeah.
The, you know, people had flats with jacuzzis in them.
Mm-hmm.
They had the Ethiopian women feeding them food. Yeah. These are black guys there. They was treated like kings.
Yeah.
And then the white guys are peeing their pants walking.
Yeah.
The white guys are just peeing their pants while the black dude's getting fed grapes.
I saw the real, I saw the real, what they call them? The, not Arabians, but the what's the guys that wear the red cloth?
Oh, the turbans?
No, the cloth. The, like Iraq guys.
Yeah. I saw the Arabs.
I saw real Arabs.
Uh-huh.
Arabs,
and,
like.
Yeah, and I don't know how you are when you travel, but if you observe, like I do, you pick up on stuff. You can tell who's who.
Okay.
Arabs, they got weight on them. Like, this is their money. This is money with no, you can't tell how much money they got.
Okay.
They got weight on. They got facial hair. They got little facial hair.
Right.
Yeah. They got the red rags on. They wear like the white gowns.
Right.
And they walk like.
And they're very rich too.
Yeah, they very rich, but you can't even put a dollar. You can't put an amount on it. Yeah. His money don't end.
Yeah.
And they with their family.
Because they're sitting a lot of oil.
Yeah.
There. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's so interesting. Wow. Wow. I was talking to some people that were doing, it sounds like your experience was very different, though. Like, you were really well taken care of. But a friend of mine was asking, you know, should she go over to entertain the troops as a female comic? And I was actually interested in it because I think it'd be a blast.
Yeah.
And the guy was like, I don't recommend it for women.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't suggest you go there at all.
Well, it's not on my to-do list right now, but I think it would be nice to do something great and fun for the troops.
Right.
I think it'd be great. I mean, it's not like something I've got to do right now. I'm just saying, ideally, it would be cool. I mean, I know Kathy Griffin did it.
Yeah, that's a different ballgame, though.
Yeah, because she's, like, super big deal.
Yeah, right. She can have security, but what's going to happen is you're in a place where, forget all the so-called sexism here, mm-hmm. but if you're over there and if a lady talks to a man, she can get punched.
Yeah. Even look him in the eye.
Yeah. We were somewhere, and a guy talked to a woman. We was in a building, and people came out. Men came out of nowhere.
Wow.
We started getting surrounded, and he reached his hand out to be like, hey, I'm such and such. And she was like, oh, like he had a gun. And the guys was like, hey, y'all got to go. Go, go, go. And I'm like, let's get out of here.
Well, does it sound like you were really on the base then?
No, we was walking around. That was an English-speaking school. That we walked in.
Okay.
Because the guy was like, hey, we speak English, let's go in here. And I'm like, this ain't a good idea.
That's funny.
You ever been in the projects? And you know, you're like, hey, this ain't a good idea. It's a feeling.
Yeah,
you
I've taken, no. I've taken, yeah. It is. I've taken a few wrong turns where I'm like, things just changed.
And you got to be on that. You got to be alert.
Well, I guess what I mean is not so much taking a tour of the, of Iran and stuff. I mean, it's there's so much going on, or Iraq, I'm sorry. There's so much going on. I'm talking about the base itself and going there and doing it for the troops. Like, I thought that's what you did, but you actually went on the...
Yeah, I actually went out. I have to go. I have to be a part of the culture.
Yeah. Well, ideally, too, yeah. I'm cool like that, but I mean, when there's bombs and stuff, I'll say, you know, I'll catch the culture.
Yeah, I wasn't on that part.
Yeah.
The thing is, if you wear jeans, like one of my escorts had on jeans and boots.
Uh-huh.
Not boots, but like shoes, tennis shoes.
Uh-huh.
Very, they looked at like trash. Mm. A woman wearing jeans and not being covered.
Oh, was
covered.
It a woman that you had?
Yeah, I had a woman escort me around, mm-hmm. take me to the mall, and the looks, like they cover their kids' eyes.
Oh, really? So they don't see that, huh?
Yeah.
God forbid they're going to see a pair of jeans.
Yep.
And
like, Daddy, what is that? And one guy covered his kid's eyes. One guy took his son and put him behind him.
Uh-huh.
Like, stand behind me.
Yeah.
And this is just walking through the mall.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's because they're not used to seeing a black man. You know, maybe.
No, it was her. That was her. The jeans was tight. Like the guy, he had his family. It's like ducks. It was like watching ducks walk because it was the man, the kids, and the woman in a line. That's how they walk.
Yeah.
And he had his kids, and he looked, and he just covered his child's eyes, but he just stared at her booty the whole time.
Yeah.
Did he?
That's how it is, you know.
Yeah.
But what about you go and you just stay on the base and you do your shows and you leave? I mean, maybe not do like a tour. I'm saying you could do that.
You could do that.
That's what they were saying. They said he said I don't even recommend that for women like doing that on just the base, just because it's just so like that. He was saying that you know where you sleep and everything is with the guys. It's not really separate.
Yeah,
and
the men there are really hungry, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, you have to understand there's a lot of rape going on in the military too.
I guess that if you're there as an entertainer though, there's probably it'd be too like you can't like I'm just saying if you're on the base. This is my question. If you're there as an entertainer, it's obvious you're there to entertain. There's probably a different treatment you get. I'm not saying that it's lavish because. Apparently, based on what this other guy said, it's not. Right. But that there's kind of a... It would be too obvious. Like, they're not going to get away with that. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like you're there for, what, 10 days or a week or something, and you're doing shows.
That's the thing. When you go to those two... I went to one place. Some people go from base to base, and they go out into the battlefield.
Okay, I don't want to do that.
In live war.
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
But then you sleep in a room with other comics. I had my separate room.
Uh-huh.
And it's too many men there that's in battle right now. Mm-hmm. They could die tomorrow.
Right.
So, do they care about rules? Do they care, like, what you going to say tomorrow if they take you tonight?
Yeah.
Nah.
Yeah.
You mean the troops? Or you mean
Yeah, the troops.
Yeah.
If I'm about to go...
They're men.
Yeah.
Men.
Well, I'm not saying I'm doing it. I'm just trying to understand.
I mean, you got to have these ideas. So, you got to...
So, Kathy Griffin did it, and it's because she's got some leverage, and she could have security. So, that was just not really a great example.
Probably.
No, it's not a good example.
Yeah.
Because she's there, and she's... Straight up, like,
yeah,
she's Kathy Griffin.
Yeah,
it was a pretty amazing show, though. On her, you know, My Life on the D-List, her reality show.
Yeah,
she was just really like talking to everybody, and it was a very emotional.
Yeah,
you know, and I just think that when I think, because I don't know, there's something that's really moving up to me about people that are doing the job for me that I can't do. And it's like, not that comedy's going to totally save the world, but I'm just saying it's something that would be wonderful, like, to go over there and like, entertain and just have a blast and celebrate.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Celebrate them, you know what I mean? Especially when they don't get to go see their families and go home. Something about that just speaks to me. I'm not saying I'm about to do that. Yeah. I'm just saying I'm curious about how it
would go. I mean,
yeah, you'd probably have a great time.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a good feeling. I flew out on September 11th of 2006.
What?
Yeah. So, you know, I was taking a chance, but... yeah. I didn't. I just looked at it as I'm going to entertain the troops. It's an experience,
mm-hmm.
right?
And it's in the Persian Gulf. I feel like I got a connection over there.
Do you feel like that now?
Yeah. Or even before I left, because it's near Africa.
Right. Have you been to Africa?
Nope.
You want to go?
Yeah.
What's your next place?
I'll probably cry when I get off the plane.
Really?
You feel a connection to Africa?
In some sense, yeah. Because you got to think this, and this is just me, but as a black man in America, who like the history has been stripped.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And I admire that about other cultures because they can go far back.
Right.
And once you learn that part, that's a major part mm-hmm. of learning who you are.
Because
mm. it's almost like having both parents in a household. You see where you come from. Mm. You see where you got your
yeah,
ideas.
Yeah, yeah.
But the further you go back, you see where they got their ideas from.
Mm.
So it's just a connection that's there.
Right. Yeah.
Like I'm trying to figure out how I can take the blood right trip.
Oh, the blood right?
Yeah, the Jewish people go.
His birthright. His daughter's gonna do it.
Yeah.
Is she doing it?
But that's to Israel. You want to go?
Yeah, I want to go there too.
Oh, you want
to
go there too?
Because
I'm interested in cultures.
Right, you're too old for them to give you a free trip.
Oh, it's too old. How about the cutoff age?
No, I think it's only like 18 through something, maybe 25 or something.
Oh, good, because I could play 18 to 25.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. You look really young.
I could play 18 to 25.
But you wish that Africa had something like that?
I don't know about Africa.
That'd stress you out. Like,
I think it's good for going to Israel and learning that.
Yeah.
I think that idea is beautiful, you know,
mm-hmm. yeah.
That a culture does that. It's beautiful. There's, Africa, I'm not sure about.
Yeah. But you probably have fun. I mean, you know, it's like you, I mean, you're right in a way. You sort of like go find your roots, you know?
Yeah.
And although I doubt that you'll ever find them. I mean, who knows, you know, how many generations it goes back, you know, who knows where it all started, you
yeah.
know, and where your ancestors were from and all that. You know, I mean, Africa is a big continent. You know?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I was like, the trip, it wouldn't be good for Africa.
Yeah.
But I like, you know, from
the
what
concept.
I heard about, yeah, their trip, the birthright trip.
Yeah, but you've got to be Jewish and you've got to be a kid, you know.
And I know I won't never find the direct connection.
Uh-huh.
But you just know it's a connection. And
well, it's funny because I, in my own little weird way, I mean, we grew up. Like, I lived with my mom till I was 10, but they were in the military, so we traveled all over the U.S., mainly the East Coast, but I was born in Florida. So then when I always had this idea that, just as a kid, that there was something magical about that place, besides Disney World, but that there was just something about, that's something about that place that I feel like is part of who I am. But I don't know if that's true. It's just this concept that I have. But also, being white in the U.S., I feel like you're culture deprived in a way. I mean, your culture of the U.S., but the historical roots, like, there's too many different, I'm a bit of this, I'm a bit of that, I'm a bit of this, to mean, like, I'm not fucking anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm just white. And so people that I meet that are European and they're like, I am German or Swedish or I'm half Italian, half German, the motherland's there.
Yeah.
It makes more sense. Whereas here, it's like, what am I? I don't even know if it even matters.
Yeah.
Other than it'd be kind of cool to see where I come from. And sometimes I meet people and they say, oh, you look like you're probably from here or there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't look like anything, you know, other than people think I am from Texas.
Right. But I think there's enough culture and history in this country, you know,
like
to
what?
Be able to. What do you mean, like why?
Like, yeah, I
mean,
like as a white
250
person.
250 years of.
As a white person, what? Let me tell you, I got some Comanche Indian. There's some Dutch. There's some every damn thing. I can list it. There's
right.
so much that you don't feel like any of it is really who you are because
right.
over it becomes watered down throughout the melting pot starts.
Right.
And you're just a different color of white.
Yeah.
And I don't really know any of those cultures. And so I don't feel any affinity or connection to it. But
right.
there's still that desire to want to know, oh, where do I really come from? Like, what is this?
Yeah.
Where do I come from in that regard?
Right.
I feel fortunate to have, I guess, broken cultural barriers, which is strange.
What do you mean?
Because I hang around different cultures.
Yeah.
And it's a connection.
Mm-hmm.
Even with religion, it's a connection.
What do you think? Like, give me an example.
I think black people and Jewish people got a connection.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's weird, because if you look through what they all been through.
Yeah. Historically. The oppression.
And stuff that they're good at.
Yeah.
You know, like we came from Africa with music.
Uh-huh.
You know, and we're still good at music.
Oh, heck yeah.
Jewish people, they came with, I mean, they was good. As far as I know, when the 1930s, when they came to New York, they had skills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they was good tailors and other stuff. And they've become the people they are through dealing with racism and stuff.
Adversity.
Yeah, that's how they funded. That's how they had that bond. They was treated bad everywhere they went. And they just formed a bond.
Mm-hmm.
And people hate them for that sometimes, which is weird. Cause
that's true.
It's y'all fault that they formed this bond and they was able to make
prosper through it. Yeah, it's total greed. It's total just hate.
Even the lawyers, the Jews, I read about the lawyers, how they became lawyers because they couldn't get jobs. Mm-hmm. This is an example from this book, The Outliers.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't get jobs when they went to school, even before then. Take it back to when they was good seamstress.
Mm-hmm.
And they opened their own tailor shops and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And they made money to send their kids to college now.
Mm-hmm.
And they became lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
And the lawyers couldn't get hired because they didn't have blue eyes, blonde hair.
Mm.
So they started their own lawyer firms, but they dealt with shitty cases.
Oh, okay.
Like hostile takeovers. They couldn't get regular cases to make money. But then business shift in the 1980s, all these businesses started buying each other. And when it came time to do hostile takeovers and takeovers and merge, they had all the skill.
Right.
Oh, wow.
So now all the Jewish lawyers just boom, start making money. Bah, 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 bah.
Yeah. You see, that's the thing. In Jewish culture, it's very important to have education.
Yeah.
To have ambition.
Mm-hmm.
To have that sort of thing. And when you do have that, when you have education, you have a drive, you have support, then you succeed.
Yeah.
And when people see you succeed, though, many times if you're different, then they don't like it. You know, and that's, I think that's where a lot of anti-Semitism comes from, you know, is because, like you said, the Jews tend to stick together.
Yeah.
And they're different, you know, and people don't like that. You know, people don't like that.
And that's what I do. I learn. Okay, why don't people like the Jewish people?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't people like black people? Latinos.
Mm-hmm.
It's a culture with Latinos. People think they hop in the fence. They don't find out how they were let through those holes for certain jobs.
Mm-hmm.
How we took, America really took their farming jobs when we started messing with our food system and crops. We took jobs from them. We took all their farming jobs in Mexico because it was cheaper for us to ship stuff to Mexico now with the Trading Act.
Right.
So to help that, we let them in to farm. To work these plants and these slaughterhouses and stuff like that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But the public don't know that.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, that's the thing is that I think there's plenty of them that are legal that can do it.
Yeah, that's true.
So, but, you know, it creates, that's why some people lump, you know, the legals with the illegals, but the point is that, you know, when they say, oh, well, we should let them in because they do jobs that we don't want to do. Well, that's bullshit on the one hand.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it's there are people, Mexicans, that are willing to do that kind of work that are legal.
Everybody's willing to do the work.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But I saw advertisements. Hmm. I saw advertisements of companies advertising in Mexico saying that they would get them in for no insurance, no wages, low wages, da 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 da.
Right. Just bring them
in. It's weird. So it's not the public.
Mm-hmm.
It's the system. It's our system here.
Right.
That's so interesting.
Okay, we're going to take another short break. We'll be back right after this.
You are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
Oh, Shitty Talk Radio proliferates the internet. Two people have teamed up to save the world. It's Sam and Kara in the morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
Okay, and we're back in the studio live with Byron.
Byron Bowers, everybody. Byron Bowers.
Yeah.
Why don't you plug some of your shows? Do you have anything coming up?
Friday, I'm at Hollywood Improv, 10 o'clock. Thursday, I'm at Ice House Pasadena at 10 o'clock. And Sunday,
that's cool. The main room?
Yep.
Really?
Yep.
At the Ice House. That's pretty good, huh?
Yeah. And Sunday, Laugh Factory.
Yeah.
8 o'clock.
Chocolate Sundays, are they still doing that or no?
Yeah.
They're okay. Cool. Awesome.
So that's three different.
You're San Diego today, right?
Yeah, San Diego also. I host a show every Tuesday in San Diego, Stress Free Tuesdays, free before 7:30 in North Park.
Cool. How do you like the San Diego crowd?
I like them. I like them, man. It's we up to like 100.
100 people?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Week.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah, so it's good. I could go there and do a couple shows.
Mm-hmm.
I could do my show and do a couple other shows. Mm-hmm. And they're diverse. They're working class people. And, you know, they understand it's real people. Like, they come see you every week and you're talking to them now.
Mm-hmm.
And you're building those relationships.
Yeah.
You connect with them.
Now, are you able to make any kind of living from this?
So far.
Yeah?
It's not the best.
Well, that's good for you, though. I mean, you know, you managed to make something out of nothing, you know?
But what I did, I kept a college living situation. I never went out and tried to do anything big.
Right.
Yeah, I worked in college, and I had a regular job in college, and I went out and did, you know, bought a lot of stuff that... Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
whatever. That changed my lifestyle.
You got a little bougie, right?
Yeah, I got rid of all that stuff except student loan, and I'm still working on that. Everybody.
That's funny.
That's nothing to play with, man. If you're gonna go to school, it's hard to say this, but try to have an idea of what you want to do. I found out what I wanted to do in college, but don't get a lot of loan money.
Yeah.
Trying to figure
crazy.
Out.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, not me. Went to a year, and I was like, who needs an education? I'm going to be a star.
Yeah. But, you know, you can go to school without needing a lot of money. You know, if you go to a...
Junior college,
and then you go to a state university or something, it's not that bad, you know?
There's different options, but a lot of times, too, I mean, it's not easy if you're having to work and go to school, and depending on the field you want to go to, and then buying books and everything. And
yeah, but you know what? I mean, you know, if you're not spoiled, you can work and go to school. You know, I mean,
you
people
can.
Do that.
Yeah, I was spoiled. I played basketball.
Yeah.
And, I guess I wasn't used to working.
Yeah.
So I came straight into the college environment. And I was the first to graduate from my family at school. So
wow.
I was the guy that experienced all those hardships.
Right.
Mm.
Of wanting to leave or this ain't for me and just fighting through it. That was like the hardest thing I ever did.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, with me also, it's like in my entire family, on both sides of my parents and that, I'm the first one that ever went to college. You know?
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah. So that's a pretty good thing, huh?
Yeah.
That's
huge.
Yeah. Although I always wanted to go back for a master's degree, but I haven't managed to do it yet. Maybe I will one day.
What would you get your master's in?
I don't know. Maybe philosophy, you know, get a PhD or something. Yeah.
That's a good one.
Oh, you think you're going to be smart then, huh? With your big college-y pants?
There you're
gonna
you
be the big conversations with me?
Yeah.
Have you go there?
Because I've already done business degree and all that stuff, you know.
So that was mine, too.
Now, in a later age, you want to do something that'll help you actualize yourself, you know.
Yeah, I got a Bachelor of Science in Business Management, and that'll separate you.
Oh,
if you grow up in the hood, because now they be like, you think like the white man. What, you a Republican?
Really?
And I'm like, well, then this is what I realized. I didn't think about it at first, but I was trained mentally how to save companies money and think business-wise. So certain ideas you agree with or you understand now.
Yeah.
When companies do this or you're like, oh, okay. But people don't understand it.
They just feel like they're being jacked around.
People, we all get mad at stuff we don't understand.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the American way.
That's a human way, I think. I think it's human.
I think it's human.
Yeah, you know, it's frustrating. You feel like, you know, you're just hitting the brick wall and, you know. Yeah, that is true, though.
Yeah. So, Kara, any new gigs for you?
What do I have going on? God, I feel like I have a lot of stuff going on.
Really? That's good.
Do I have any performing gigs lined up? I've got a couple things that are in the works right now. I'll keep you guys posted on that.
Not just performing, but anything.
Yeah, I know. I feel like you asked me, and it's like I'm going through my Rolodex right now. I'm going to start doing some of these trade shows that I'm going to get to travel to do and sell massage chairs.
Really? That'll be cool.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
Sell massage chairs.
Hi, guys. I'm going to take a little load off.
This is not an easy sell, you know.
I don't know. You know what? It looks like it's going to be pretty profitable. They've been doing really, really well. The company has. I mean, it's a gig. It's just it's a gig, but it's going to allow me to kind of like get out and,
now, will Happy Endings come with these chairs?
No, it's in the middle of daylight at a Home and Garden show. So, there's that stuff starting
she
up.
She doesn't give the massage. She just tried to sell the bed.
I'm selling the bed.
The chairs.
The chair. And that's going to start in May. When is your birthday again?
May 10th.
But when's the party?
Oh, the 15th.
Let me make sure I'm here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got it on here. Okay.
You'll be here.
I will, but I know I start like in right around those dates of doing these things.
Yeah.
But it's really great because it's pretty profitable, so I wouldn't have to do I could do this and that and not have to do something in between because it's really, really good.
Nice.
So yeah, hopefully it works out. And then I'm just, you know, tons of stuff are going on.
How was the comedy awards? The rest of it.
You mean the we went to the LA Comedy Shorts Festival?
Yeah,
it was really fun. I had a blast. I met so many great people. I've already had a get together with a bunch of people that I met there and barely knew. We had like a little dinner thing. You have to come over. We're gonna do it again. Yeah, just fun. He was in one of the films there, and it was interesting.
But the interview's online. You can YouTube it.
I saw the interview.
Byron Bowers. And then I got a internet webisode called The Break Room. So if you...
That was funny.
If you Google or YouTube The Break Room promo, and then you can find The Break Room on Vimeo, what it's called?
Vimeo,
it's 15 minutes.
It's funny. I saw some of that. I was laughing really hard.
Really?
Yeah.
He's so funny. He's good. I won't tell you guys all of it. But
I did a breast pump commercial.
What?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
I'm real diverse now.
I love it. Oh, man, I love it. Breast pump commercial.
Bigger and better things are headed my way.
Should we look it up on YouTube?
Yeah, you can.
But is it something that needs to be seen, or can you...
No, it's better if you see it. I'm better.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's very visual.
I got a website, ByronBowersLive.com also. You can go check that in the calendar.
Yeah.
And see where I'm performing next live.
Sounds good.
Come meet me.
So now, I mean, so you hear, you see all these hot women and stuff, and then you realize, gee, I'm married, you know. What do? So you run for the porn.
What happens is I work fast. So if I meet a girl and it's like she's interested in me, I could tell what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, wow, I'm going to sleep with this chick, then I'm going to be bored. Yeah. And then I'm not going to be with her no more. And then you're like, what's the point? Mm-hmm. And why trade it in when I got this?
Beautiful, wonderful
supporting
woman.
Yeah, because she's not around. That's why.
Well,
she's going to be around now.
Yeah, she's going to be around. And she support me so much. So I guess I'm a guy from support. I don't know. I probably didn't have a lot of support when I was younger.
Yeah.
So she support me, and that's major. That's major for men, support.
It is. I think when women really invest in men and build them up and really, compliment men and stuff, I think it really, really, really... I even see it with you. If I'd be like, hey, like, you smell good today or something. Mm-hmm. You're like, really? when Dina tells you you're hot every day and you're like, yeah, it's pretty cool, makes you feel good.
Right.
You know, I think that even like my brothers or people, guy friends in my life that are strictly platonic, I'll just call out the goodness in them. You're calling to the deeper parts. And I've got a really good friend of mine who, he's so funny. He should be doing comedy. He's not. And he's wanted to do music, and I was like, you gotta get out there, just start working on some of your songs and just do some open mics or whatever. So the first person he played in front of him was me, and now he's doing gigs all over town. Mm-hmm. And I take full credit for it. No, not really. But he thanks me all the time, and it's not because I did anything. It's just all I did was call out what was inside of him, really just build that part of him up. And I've experienced a lot of friends in my life where you just don't see this stuff in you. You're just like, whatever, this is who I am. And people are like, you're really this, or you're really that, and you're really this. And you go, oh, I am? And you start noticing it, and then it starts to build. And so I really believe that calling to the deep part of people and really drawing those things out, it's just, and men need it. I think, like you're saying, women need it too. But I think for men that are going out every day and there's a beat down process that happens in life and in LA and stuff. Yeah. And they just need to be reminded of the talents and what you're great at and what you're made to do. And you know what I mean? I think we all need that.
Yeah.
Yeah. LA, what do you think LA living has been for you? Like people here and the culture?
The first year I didn't like it. It's a growing experience.
Mm.
Usually when you don't like something, you have an issue.
Mm.
So finding out what that was.
What was your issue then?
I don't know yet.
Because then everybody's got an issue. Most people that move here don't like it at first.
Yeah, because it's... I don't know. I guess because I'm still a little antisocial.
Oh, are you?
And having to deal with that. That's because you see me on stage and I'm just open on stage.
Yeah.
But then off stage, it's like, it's too much fakeness going on that I'm reserved.
Yeah, no, I understand.
And I'm patient because I still feel people's spirits. I feel genuine spirits.
Mm.
Like, yeah. I connect with people like that.
Yeah.
Versus... hey, I got this going on. Da, da,
no,
da,
I hate
da.
That shit. I hate it.
Here, you ask somebody how they doing. They telling you projects, and you just want to know.
How you doing?
Yeah, how you holding up mentally, or.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you staying in shape, you motivated.
Yeah.
You look a little down.
Right.
You want real connection, and here you got so much. Everybody's trying to get somewhere, so the whole idea of just shut up and be a human real quick is a novel concept.
Yeah, it's a culture. It's a different culture you have to adjust to.
You know what's funny, too, is being on the show, and as I'm talking to people I know that have cool things going on, and I'm like, hey, would you love to come on the show and do this or whatever? There's some people that I'm noticing, or I had this conversation yesterday, this interesting interaction yesterday. Well, first of all, I thought I was going to start my period all over myself. So the guy was trying to have a conversation with me. Sorry, guys. And I was like, okay, we're going to have to wrap this up. Okay, yeah. You're going places, I get it. But I got to go to the bathroom. Hang tight, we'll be back and we'll talk shop, right? So that's kind of how the part of the conversation went. But then it was like, yeah, we're working on this, we got this. I'm like, I don't need to be sold. I already know what you're doing. I already think you're awesome.
Yeah.
Just come on the show. This is the date. Let me know the date and we'll do it. It doesn't need to be this
yeah.
It's not necessary.
Yeah.
It's just be human.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, people like to drop names here, and you know.
I think it's not even that everybody's a pretentious a-hole. It's just they're programmed to constantly be selling themselves.
Yeah.
And it's like it gets in the way of real human connection. It's like not necessary. Relax.
Yep.
And I find that people really want to discover talent. They want to discover what you're doing. They don't really want you like, you know, they don't. It's not as fun. No.
To me, Sam, it's a system. I look at it like since college was the hardest thing I ever done, I compare it to college, and I didn't really graduate. I struggled with it until I learned the system.
Mm.
And that's how LA is.
Mm.
So I figured, you know, I just take my time. And once I learn the system, you're able to move. It's like watching The Matrix. Once you learn how to read The Matrix, you're able to make it work for you.
Mm-hmm. Mm. What is the system that you've seen here?
I'm just learning how things work.
Oh, you're still learning. Okay.
Yeah, I'm learning how things work. I'm learning how people get movie deals. I'm learning how people get agents and stuff mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah.
And you could chase it or you can make it come to you.
Yep, and that's what I think.
And you got to choose what you want
to
do.
Mm-hmm. Because I used to chase it, doesn't work. And I feel like if you build it, they will come.
Yeah.
Take your time, work on your talent, do the things that really aren't going to inspire people to want to know you.
Yeah.
That's what I'm learning. Like, even with good friends of mine, like Sarah, who's very, very talented. I mean, she's big time in Canada, and she's done some stuff on Broadway. And, you know, coming out here has been a real struggle. Just, she's like, why can't I even get a meeting with an agent? I'm like, welcome to LA, you know?
Yeah.
But I think it's humbling because it makes you kind of go, okay, well, then what really matters? And it's like the more I notice in her that she's just doing what she's good at and enjoying the process.
Yeah.
People are like want to know her and they want to be a part of her projects, and it's kind of this building thing.
Yeah, that's
same
true.
Thing with me. It's like when I do a show or whatever, or it kind of opens up another door that people, as opposed to, hey, can I get booked? Can I get booked?
Yeah.
It's just different.
It's like dating, or it's people I talk to that have made it,
mm-hmm.
and they always talk about the process.
Mm-hmm.
The process was the funnest time.
Right.
When they didn't have
really?
Money.
The journey.
Yeah, the journey.
Right.
And even in relationships, like we both married, the journey of getting to the marriage was interesting.
Yeah.
The dates, the wild stuff you did and stuff like that. That's the stuff you got to continue to bring to the table.
Wow. And you found that like that's similar with people that have kind of hit their career. They've already opened up that part of their life, and now they're trying to
Yeah, to redo it all over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a journey. It's in their eyes.
Mm.
You know? Like somebody told me when I got here, they was like, don't lose that look in your eye. Don't become bitter. Nothing.
Mm. Yeah.
You gotta project positive attitude.
Yeah.
You really.
That's it. That's it. That's what's going
on. You can't show
people.
You're bitter or anything like that. You know.
Yeah.
Anyway, the good news is that I guess Playboy magazine donated $900,000 to save the Hollywood sign. So apparently now it gives the fundraisers the $12.5 million they needed to buy and protect
the sign.
Land.
Did you hear about that, Byron?
No.
Well, first of all, did you know that the Hollywood sign was possibly going to be taken down?
No.
Okay.
I live on that street.
I know. We live right by there. I go hiking up Beechwood all the
time.
They were going to take it down to build homes.
Are you serious?
And this happened like 3 days. For three days, they had the Hollywood sign was covered in these cloaks that said "Save the Peaks."
Right.
And like for 3 days, because this is how busy LA people, they didn't even know that this. Like I asked Sam, "Did you see the sign?" You're like, "What are you talking about?" And people that live over there, you didn't even know that it was clothed. Right. So instead of saying Hollywood, it said "Save the Peaks."
Right.
Wow.
And because I went hiking, I was like, oh, wow. And they were still putting on some of it. So it was an effort to draw attention to it. And right. then now here we are. And, you know, Hugh Hefner has donated a lot. But so did several yeah. other people, too.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, they came up with $12.5 million. But I guess that was enough. Because they said a public land trust was formed to buy the land out of fear that luxury homes would be built near the landmark.
Yeah, which is what they were planning on doing.
Yeah.
And I think it looks beautiful open like that. I think, you know, come on. There's got to be some places we don't have houses,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it looks nice. It looks nice like it is, and it's a tourist attraction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is, you know. And they're saying that the Cahuenga Peak, I guess that's what they call that area, will be forever protected by adding it to Griffith Park.
Nice.
Oh, perfect.
Nice.
Perfect. And I go hiking up there all the time.
Yeah.
So beautiful. Well, you know, it's funny. So I'm internet dating, right? So I do these little internet dating things on and off, right?
Yeah.
I never pay for it, but then like every 2 months I'll get like, come back for free for like 3 days, and I'll be like, I'm gonna just take a little peek and see what's going on. Let's take a look at the inventory this week and see this month and see if any of them gotten cuter and smarter. Basically, uh-huh. is what we do. So that just happened. So I took a little look at my stuff.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so. And then this guy, because I'm from, you know, live in LA, he sent me this thing like, hey, so you girls did a great job getting Hugh Hefner to help you out. And this is kind of before I realized he was referring to the
Hollywood sign.
The Hollywood sign. And yeah. I was like, who in the hell does he think that I am? I'm not a Playboy bunny. This is bullshit. Delete. And Sarah read it and she's like, hey, it's so disrespectful. And we're like going off.
That's funny.
Yeah. But here's the thing, too, because people can instant message you on this thing, uh-huh. but it doesn't show you their photo until you click yes to instant message. So call me like mean or rude. And I've been instant message cussed out before on this, but I'll click yes because I don't know who I'm dealing with. And then if I'm not feeling the photo, I instantly click out. I mean, right. this is a, you know, I'm a nice, loving person, but we're all here for the same reason, or hopefully, right? You're wanting to meet somebody
yeah.
that you're like, attracted to.
Right.
So I'm not going to pretend, like, why do we have to be nice? Mm-hmm. Look, if you're not feeling it, then don't, if you can't handle some rejection, don't put yourself out there.
Yeah.
Oh, that's tough.
But no, all I'm saying is, I've had so many dudes that are like, you're cold, you just clicked out of my thing, da-da-da-da-da, it's women like you, and I'm like probably one of the nicest, I think I've got a big heart, you know, like I'm a nice, loving person, but you know, look, you know, you've got,
Well, that's the shit that guys have to deal with all the time.
Yeah.
And they put it back on the woman.
Rejection.
I think women take rejection better because women are like, shit.
Y'all do.
We take rejection better. It's just part of life. Like,
because you don't get rejected as often.
I've been rejected a lot throughout my life in so many areas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, from family to school to friendship to some guy situations. I mean, tons of rejection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think part of being an entertainer is you hear no more than you hear yes.
Right.
And you keep going on knowing
but
that there's going to
be yes. But
not in
love and relationships. That's what I'm saying.
I don't handle it well. If I give you a flyer and you be like, no, thank you, I'm like, bitch, I'll kill you. I get angry.
Have you ever had that happen?
Yeah.
What are you talking about? Where are you handing flyers? Where are you handing flyers out?
Just handing flyers out. I used to work for the census.
Oh, no. I wasn't smart enough for that job. I took a test, a five-hour-long test.
Man, and when people be like, no, I get angry.
Really?
Yeah. I don't handle.
Yeah. Well, you shouldn't be in sales then, for sure.
I know.
I've been in sales too, so you hear a lot of rejection. I've done a lot of sales where it's like, no, 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 and you don't take no. In sales, you learn to maneuver. It's actually I got out of sales because they dissolved the company I was working for. But I started realizing it was really changing my heart a little bit and my personality in like not a good way because I'm a good salesperson. But you learn how to maneuver and manipulate because it's your job.
Yeah.
And you learn to do it. And I was like. And not that I didn't feel bad because I wasn't selling anything. I wasn't selling anything that was bad or unethical. But it was just that I was good at doing this. When people are like, I really don't want it. I really don't want to afford it. Don't think they can afford it. And you really just you keep building the benefits. You keep painting the picture for them. And you keep basically showing them how they can afford it if they do this, this, and this, and how it's going to benefit them. And you basically you just don't take no. And you're not your feelings aren't hurt. Right. You just have one mission.
Yeah, and you handle
get them on paper. Get them on paper and let that 3-day pass where they can't renege. Mm-hmm. You lock them in. Boom.
Yeah. That was a telemarketer. I did the opposite. I called one lady. She was crying. I almost cried too.
Really?
Like, you broke. I'm like, me too. That's why I'm here. I don't even like this job. Something happened because as kids, we always take no. Kids are persistent. Mm-hmm. They ask you something 30 times.
Right.
Can I get a cookie? No. How about now? Nope.
That's true.
No, it'll be better if we had cookies. No. Nope.
What about you? You guys planning kids when your wife moves here?
Probably in like 4 years, maybe 5.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, she asked about them already.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't wait till you're too old, you know, because then you don't have patience for them.
What's too old? I already don't have
35
patience.
35 is already pretty old, I think.
For real?
Yeah.
No.
Why?
Sam, it's like freaking 2010. People deal with it.
Yeah.
You know, if he makes it too, he can get a couple nannies for her and they can coast a bit, right?
There's people having babies when they're 60.
No, I know that they do, but I'm not saying it's ideal, you know?
Oh.
He's saying you're going to get wore out, and at that age, when you get older, you're not going to want to go run after a toddler.
Right.
Oh, well, you know.
Yeah.
My toddler's going to be laid back.
Yeah, that's what they all say.
My toddler's going to be late. For those of you guys who can't see, Byron is just like, he always looks stoned, although he's not at all. And you don't do drugs, do you?
No.
And you don't drink, right?
I have occasional drink.
Do you?
Chambord and cranberry juice.
So what's with the not drinking thing? Is that just a fear of addiction, or is it one of those just you don't like it? You don't.
It's a little bit of both, man.
Yeah.
And usually I don't smoke weed before weird stuff happens.
Okay.
It's like I start hearing stuff and was that a ghost?
Yeah.
I feel spirits. You know that guy.
Yeah, and, yeah. Yeah.
And then with drinking, I either get extra angry or cocky or just real sad.
Yeah.
Oh really?
So you have anger in you. I mean, obviously, you know, you mentioned it a couple times and stuff. Who doesn't, you know?
Yeah, who doesn't in this world? You get beat up a lot.
Yeah, but that's it.
I mean, you've had a bunch of swirlies, right? You had a bunch of swirlies and some freaking numb nut, you know, what do they call it, wedgies?
Yeah. One day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you endured a tough childhood, you know, no father in the house, being bullied and that, so... Yeah, that would create a lot of anger, you know.
Uh-oh.
I used to be very angry all the time.
Yeah.
Really?
But then you get older, you get mellower, you know.
Yeah, you learn how to deal with it.
Yeah.
I made it through college. I made it to college based off anger. I used anger if you was all that.
Yeah.
Really?
Just people saying you're not going to be able to do anything or you should have been locked up by now. You made it.
Yeah.
You know, and where I'm from, if you 18, you ain't have a child or a baby, you made it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The bar is low.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, wow.
I hear you, man.
Then jealousy comes in.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
What does Drake say with his new song? He's like, it's funny how someone else's success can bring pain.
Yeah.
You know? It's just an interesting double-edged sword, huh, for people.
Yeah. Jay-Z talks about it, how it is at the top.
What does he say?
It's just lonely. It's like you're a king, you know, and people, you know, come after kings.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, that's what it talks about in the Bible, the Proverbs. It talks about, or no, not Proverbs. It talks about it in Ecclesiastes. But, you know, the wealth and then being rich men always worrying about their wealth and having to protect their wealth.
Yep.
Now it's this awesome blessing has become a burden. You know, they have to protect it. They have to, you know, this, that, and the other. And that's why I'm like, don't get me wrong. I'd love to be rolling in the dough, but I don't want it to be something that I have to live for now, and I have to protect it, and I have to maintain it, and I have to make it multiply.
Well, you will, because you make when you don't have it,
mm-hmm.
you work to get it, and mm-hmm. when you get it, you work to protect it
mm-hmm.
from taxes or mm-hmm. whoever.
Yeah,
taxes is major.
Yeah,
when you have money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too.
Okay, well, taxes, religion, it's all the same to me.
Is it?
Yeah.
Nuh-uh.
Could be.
It's funny, on Facebook, on my profile, I have where it says religion, I said, the hell with everything. And then other politics, I put, the hell with everything, you know. So that's pretty much how I view that.
That's smart. That is smart. Because religion used to control government.
Yeah. It did. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's... Man, there's so much stuff behind that.
Yeah.
Mm.
All right. Well, Byron, thank you for joining us.
Thank you all for having me, okay. Friends and family out there.
Go catch him at the Ice House or the, did you say the comedy
Hollywood club? Improv. Ice House Thursday, 10 p.m. Mm-hmm. Hollywood Improv Friday at 10 p.m. And Laugh Factory Sunday in each and every Tuesday in San Diego.
San Diego.
That's
sounds
awesome.
Cool.
Very right, funny. Well, you don't want to miss him.
Facebook, too. Twitter, Facebook.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Or call Kira.
Okay.
Or call me, yeah.
All right, Byron. You're a lot of fun. Thanks for joining
Thanks
us.
Thanks for sharing, man.
Thanks,
we appreciate
Sam.
It.
This is amazing. Much success to y'all. It's going to get big.
Yeah.
It's going to get big.
Yeah. Well, we're big already, but we'll get bigger for sure. Okay, Kira, thank you so much.
Hey, Sam. Have a great time. See you tomorrow.
And thank you all for listening. We'll be back here tomorrow.
You have been listening to Sam and Kara in the Morning, which airs every weekday from 9 a.m. until 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, originating from the Los Angeles Talk Radio Studios. If you have questions about the show or would like to inquire about sponsorship opportunities, please direct all correspondence to info@latalkradio.com. Sam and Kara in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.